Hello and welcome to Click Therapy for Dogs and the People Who Love Them. I'm Vivian Zottola, a human-dog relationship therapist, working with people and their pet dogs to improve their relationship. I also volunteered my time as a subject matter expert and research associate with the Center for Canine Behavior Studies, a nonprofit organization. Over the past two decades, I've dedicated my life to educating people living with pets and other animals. My hope is to improve pet companion welfare, reduce frustration, and the risk of surrender. If you're new to the podcast, thanks for listening. And if you've listened before, welcome back. In this episode, I'm going to cover one of my favorite topics, which was introduced to me in my first year in my graduate studies at Canisius College. It's now called Canisius University. This concept isn't new. It wasn't new to me, but knowing that there was a word for it was surprising. And I was excited. I really was. I earned a Master's of Science in Applied Anthrozoology, which is the study of human-animal relations. And I had always intuitively understood this concept, but didn't know there was a name for it. So I was really excited. And the concept is the Umwelt. Umwelt, spelled U-M-W-E-L-T, pronounced Umwelt. I hope I'm saying it right. It's a German word used by entologists to describe an organism's unique sensory world. What we mean by world is environment, or rather the internal biological environment of an individual. So literally, when you translate the word, it means quote-unquote self-centered world. So those of you who are not familiar with the study of entology, it's a discipline that stems from anthropology. Anthropology is the study of characteristics of different people and the relationship between them. Entology is a branch of anthropology. Umwelt was first coined by Jakob von Uexküll. He was a German biologist who worked in the field of muscular physiology, which is the study of the function of muscles. And he also studied animal behavior studies. So he was familiar with how bodies moved, joints and connections and such. And he worked on all kinds of animals to try to understand. I do believe that he was more of a social anthropologist only because he would have been interested in the patterns of behavior, which is what a social anthropologist does. And I think that's what led him to recognize the Umwelt and to further describe it in a book that he wrote. In 1934, he wrote a book that was entitled The Foray into Other Worlds of Animals and Humans. He theorized that each organism interprets the world based on their own unique sensory perceptions. Every species has evolved to adapt to their surrounding. And so what he had realized was that each living being is perceiving the world differently. And so this is a concept that's really important for anyone that lives with another species. And so when we think about living with our dogs, we're actually technically living in what's called an interspecies small social group. It's also known as a family. We have two different species living together. Humans are a social species, and our dogs are social species as well. We're both social and cooperative. We came together over about, some say 10, some say 20. I believe it's about 40,000 years ago. I'm not going to go into how we came together or the literature that's out there in this podcast, but it's pretty impressive that we have lived with each other for so long. And I'll talk about this in another podcast, we also have some evidence that genetically we're starting to share some similar genes. And I'll get into that in another podcast. But yeah, let's get back to Uexküll. Okay, so in 1934, Jakob publishes a book called The Foray into Other Worlds of Animals and Humans, and he theorizes that each organism interprets the world based on their own sensory perceptions. So we know now through evolutionary biology that every species has evolved to adapt to their surrounding. Now, 1934, that's pretty early. He's trying to put this together. He's trying to explain to people that each individual animal experiences the world through their own sensory perception. And Uxel compares an animal's body to a house. So he says, each house, let's call the house the animal or the species, has a certain number of windows. And so the windows, we would assume that those windows would be senses, because he describes each sense, or each window rather. For example, he says, one window is a light window, one window is a sound window, another window is an olfactory window, another window is a taste window, and then there's a tactile window. And all of these windows open up into a garden, and the garden, I interpret, is the surroundings, is the world. So, or at least the reader is interpreting this. He is explaining that, and I'm paraphrasing, that depending on how the windows are built, the garden will change as it's seen from the person in the house or the being that's sensing the world. Now, at this time in our history, this blew people's minds away. And, you know, there were a lot of people that couldn't wrap their minds around it. Maybe because they were closed off due to how they were raised. Maybe because of religious or cultural differences. I don't know. I mean, it was a different time, 1934. Nonetheless, it was a very, very, very novel concept, and I found it very intriguing. So the thing that I pulled out of the book is that it conveys the notion that all living things interpret the same garden, the world, but they're limited in how they experience it. So, for example, humans, and he writes about this, he compares humans and ticks. So the human might have more windows, right? Or they have bigger windows. And a tick only has 3 windows. And in fact, that's true. The tick, in terms of their senses, they can sense the odor of butyric acid. They can sense temperature corresponding to the blood of animals. And they can sense when there's a hairy animal that's close by, so they can jump on them and then suck the blood out of them. And that's their life. You know, that's what they live for. I remember realizing this and thinking, my God, some ticks spend years just sitting on a leaf waiting for a dog, a deer, a person to walk by and jump on them. So the concept of each species experiencing the world, same surrounding, but doing so in a different way based on how they've evolved is pretty cool. And so that was 1934 when it was first introduced. Fast forward to 2021, I pick up a book written by Ed Young. The book is called An Immense World: How Animal Senses Reveal the Hidden Realms Around Us. Ed Young is a winning science writer on the staff of The Atlantic, and he does a great job with this book. I was so thrilled to pick it up and read it. It just brought me back to my studies in anthropozoology and the awakening that I had. So many courses, but in particular this one, when we went over the concept of the Umwelt, I really did have an awakening. It helped me better understand other animals, recognizing my limitations. He writes that every animal shares the same illusion, which is that our world is all-encompassing. All we know is what we perceive from the world, which is based on our sensory perception. Each species will translate their experience differently based on how they've evolved and adapted to their environment, which we know. And he writes, we are the same in that we believe our world is all-encompassing because it is all we know. It is an illusion that every animal shares. And I thought that was very profound. And this is what happens a lot. I'll meet people and they will believe that their dog or their cat, their pet companion, is experiencing the same reality and they're not. Certainly, emotionally, we are similar, but perceptionally, we are not. Our dogs have evolved to experience life through the lens of different sensory perceptions. Their sense of smell is phenomenal. I won't go into all of the details in this episode about their unique sensory perceptions. We'll do it in another one, but their sense of smell, their hearing, their eyesight, even though they're not farsighted, they do see movement much better than we do. And they are just amazing. They have superpowers that we don't. So they really cannot understand the world like we do. Mr. Young, Ed Young, does a great job in his book, An Immense World, How Animal Senses Reveal the Hidden Realms Around Us. And he starts the book off by asking the reader to imagine a large auditorium size room in that there's an elephant, and then maybe a few seconds later, a songbird flies in, and then there's an owl that you can see on a perch on a banister. There's a bat that's hanging upside down. There's a mosquito. There's a rattlesnake on the floor. There's a spider hanging in the corner. There's a tiny mouse hidden behind a potted plant where a bee lands on a flowering blossom. And if that were me, I would probably freak out because I'm really nervous about spiders and snakes. But anyway, so we're sitting in this auditorium. And so he asks us to imagine ourselves sitting in the same room and begin to try to perceive how they are perceiving the world, the same environment in this auditorium. And so he goes on to describe the elephant, the rattlesnake, and the mosquito. They take information in by smelling. They're smelling the space around them, very much like a dog would. A dog would use their sense of smell first. The sense of smell is very important to dogs, and actually that's how they interpret the world. Sense of smell is, I like to say, how a dog sees the world. They're not visually seeing the world, but they're interpreting the world through taking in particles of information that they're smelling through their nose. And again, I'm going to talk about their unique sensory perception in another podcast, but let's get back to the elephant, the rattlesnake, and the mosquito. They're taking information in through smell, smelling the space around them. The elephant raises his trunk to take in the information through their nose. The rattlesnake, pretty cool, they flick their tongue to take information in. Isn't that very cool? So they're not smelling through their nose, they're smelling through their tongue because that's how they evolved. The mosquito, on the other hand, uses their antenna to collect information. So the rattlesnake smells a mouse, the mouse that's on the floor, and he prepares to attack. And the mosquito smells the carbon dioxide on your breath and your skin, and they try to land on your arm to bite you. Then the mouse lets out a squeak that's too high in frequency for the elephant to hear, but the bat can hear the sound that the mouse makes. The elephant lets out a thunderous rumble through their feet that's only felt by the snake. We are not able to hear that low pitch or the high frequency sound from the mouse, but we can hear the songbird. We can hear the song, but we're unable to interpret their complex code that they use in their song to communicate with other birds. So this is very cool. Ed Young takes a different position than Jakob, but still helping the reader understand that each species responds to the environment through unique sensory perception. So in this story that Mr. Young asks us to participate in, we are observing how different animals interact with each other. They're all in the same environment. Very cool. And so when the room is dimly lit, we can see the bird, and it's a red cardinal. The color is red to us, not to the elephant, who sees just blue and yellow on the spectrum. The bee that's in the room doesn't see the color of the red bird. The bee is sensitive to ultraviolet light. So as we continue on our journey to understand other animals and how they perceive the world around them, suddenly the light goes out in this auditorium. We cannot see, but we can feel our way around. And the mouse does the same thing. They use their whiskers, also known as vibrisses, are stiff hairs that function as tactile organs. And we'll see them on our cats and our dogs around their face, their muzzle, ears, their feet. So what happens is fingers, they can feel the world around them, helping them to map out a room around them when it's dark. The mouse moves about and it makes sounds. And in this particular room, the auditorium, the owl picks up the sounds. Now an owl has feathers on their face, and these feathers are really stiff, and they funnel the sound towards their sensitive ear. And so an owl can calculate exactly where the mouse is located on the ground. The snake, remember Mr. Snake on the ground? He detects infrared radiation that emanates from warm objects. In fact, a dog's nose also can detect infrared radiation through their nose. Very cool. So back to the auditorium, the spider, which is in the room, can hardly hear, but they do rely on vibrations. So they can sense vibrations generally from their web. And then the bat that's in the room, bat detects movements. It uses high frequency sound waves or sonar. What they do is they send out a sonar and bounces back, and then they can imprint in their brain what's in the environment. So they're mapping out the world around them using sonar. Pretty cool. Dolphins do the same thing. And then this auditorium, the bat swoops down, it eats the spider. And as the spider is eaten, the bird senses a change in the weather. And then he talks about how birds have an internal clock that allows them to understand when to migrate to warmer climate, and they use an internal compass that is guided by the Earth's magnetic field that helps them map their journey down south, which is where I wish I were right now because it's pretty cold here. So pretty cool that all of these different species have evolved and adapted to their surroundings, and they perceive the world very differently. All of the beings discussed experience the same physical space in their own unique way. And so the Umwelt, the Umwelt, our understanding of the fact we, all living beings, inhabit the same earth, yet we've all evolved differently and adapted to our surroundings. And so when we consider coexisting with each other, especially if you're living with a pet companion, taking a step back, especially if you're having a bad day or perhaps your pet is behaving in a way that makes you scratch your head, of course, the first thing you should be considering is their basic needs, just to ensure that they have had their water, had their food, gone on their exercise, socialized. If they'd like to socialize, you know, it depends on the stage of life that they're in. But recognizing first and foremost that they rely on you for everything. They live with you and rely on you to take them out toileting, to eat, to drink, so on and so forth. That is really important first and foremost. Second, that they do perceive the world very differently. And again, I'm going to get into particularly dogs' unique sensory perception in another podcast. Know that their sense of smell, their hearing, their eyesight, if they are a young, robust dog, I'm not talking about old dogs or young dogs. Again, life stage of the dog matters, and because their sense of their perception can be skewed, declining cognitively, or if they're a very young puppy, or if they're an adolescent, you know, their stage of life does matter. So take a step back, take a breath, reframe your perception, recognize, put on those glasses, recognizing that our animals are experiencing the world very differently. And also recognize that we can get close to understanding our dogs better and providing them with improved welfare by starting from a point that we acknowledge they operate from a different understanding of the world. They do possess different sensory abilities than ourselves, whether that's their ability to smell, their ability to hear, see, and just understand the world around them. It's translated differently, which affects their behaviors. And so that's an important point. And again, in this podcast episode, we covered the concept of the Umwelt. I described what ethnology is, anthrozoology. We went over Jakob von Uxel, who was the German biologist, in his book that he wrote. We also exercised the power of imagination, first with Jakob and his houses and the windows, and that was in 1934. And then we skipped to 2021 with Ed Yong's book and his description of a room full of different animals and how they interacted with each other. And we imagined our surroundings, how they might be different through the sensory perception of another animal, which led us to recognize each of us has our own limitations, which is an important consideration when we're engaging with each other, when we're engaging with another pet companion that we live with, or even animals in the wild. So I hope you found this episode useful in helping you understand and improve your relationship with your dog friend just a little more than before you listened. Your effort to learn is greatly appreciated by me, and I'm sure your dog will love you forever for it. If you enjoyed this episode, I'd appreciate if you'd subscribe and share it with a friend. As always, if you have questions or a topic that you'd like me to cover, please email Vivian@dogbehaviorandconsulting.com. Thank you for listening.